Thank you, Jonathan. This is actually the wonderful Dara, who's here to help with this morning's scripture reading. Yeah. So Dara's a senior at Emmanuel, and she's shortly off to the University of Purdue. Purdue University? Purdue. Yeah.
Okay, so today's scripture reading is from Matthew 5:33-37. Again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, "Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made." But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one.
Thank you, Dara. Okay, so yeah, love the clapping. You've had your caffeinated chocolate. Yeah, it's gonna be very good. We're gonna have some fun this morning. I'd like to start off with a question that I think is actually fun, kind of an icebreaker. The question is this: if you could borrow someone's mind for just a day, whose mind would you borrow for a day, and why? Einstein, because obvious. Yeah, Einstein's good. Actually, somebody in first service shouted out, "Anybody whose mind would help me talk to women better." I thought that was good. Yeah, self-awareness. It's really important. At the top of my list would be actually my favorite Iron Chef, Chopped Judge. Any Food Network people out here? The one and only Alex Gornischelli. I think she's just the best when it comes to like creativity, just nuance of flavor. It's like she's so funky and just pulls stuff into meals that you never would think. And I'm like, oh, I would love to have her mind for a day because, well, fun fact about me, I do like to party. And dinner party's great. And I just think like, okay, if I had Alex's mind for a day, can you imagine the experiences I could create for family, for friends? It would be so fun. Well, the point of the question is this. The idea that if I had someone's mind, I would be able to do dot, dot, dot. Like, oh, with their mind, with the mind comes the capability to do. Here's the thing. If I'm primarily concerned with making some smart investments for a day, you know what kind of difference I could make for the long term of my life if I had one of our Shark Tank's mind, Damon John or Mark Cuban's mind for a day? If I wanted to do some investing, I need that kind of mind. If I wanted to build something that I could send into outer space, I might need Mr. Musk's mind just for a day. If I was really interested in enjoying like a fish and chips with all kinds of vinegar all over it, I might ask for Derek's mind for a day. Yeah. Yeah, Craig understands that was a joke about him being British, right? Fish and chips and vinegar. Okay. Let's stay focused. Look, the idea is this. If I had their mind, I would be able to dot, dot, dot. Well, one of the central claims of Christianity is if I want to do righteousness, if I want to do righteousness, if I want to live in right relationship with others and right relationships with God, I need the mind of Christ. This is a core conviction of Christianity. It is the mind of Christ that enables us to do righteousness. First century followers of Jesus were all about this idea of the mind of Christ. Okay, in the writings that would be passed around in the churches in the first century, you see this language popping up. They would talk often about, as a community, we need to be of one mind. We need to have a sound mind. And even explicitly, you see it like this. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 2:16, he says, we have the mind of Christ. We have the mind of Christ. And for first century followers of Jesus, this was their secret. Like the secret to living out the way of Christ was by obtaining the mind of Christ. So I really wanted to start out with this whole idea of the mind of Christ for two reasons. One, honestly, it's just a compelling idea. This idea that the mind of Christ is a thing. And I don't know, it sounds kind of mysterious to me. And I'm like, oh man, the mind of Christ. It sounds powerful. And then ultimately, where we want to get to is this reality that the mind of Christ is available to us. And this is the bottom line, and it's just a couple things. Like, if you don't hear anything else, this is one of the things I really hope you hear this morning, is that the mind of Christ has been made available to us. And it's a really important idea that's worth considering. And then really, because this passage that Dara just read, just Jesus' teaching about oaths and promises and vows and let your yes be yes and your no be no, to get at the heart of what Jesus is teaching here. And if we could kind of get to a point where we say, well, this is what Jesus is saying in terms of, like, this is Jesus's dreams for our life. It's gonna cause us to consider this reality of an inner life. The reality of an inner life that we carry, and then an outer life that people see. And for the biblical writers, this idea of having a mind or an inner life or a heart is all the same thing. The mind of Christ, inner life of Christ, heart of Christ. This is gonna be an important idea for this morning. So I'd like to get to what Jesus said, and to get us started thinking about that teaching, I want to read two scriptures from Torah law. This is, Jesus activates his audience with this language. You know, you've heard it said, and then he quotes Torah law. And I just want to look at the two places where this is coming from, just to get us started thinking about this. Deuteronomy 23 and Numbers 30. This is what Jesus is taking, and then ultimately he'll extend for his audience. Deuteronomy 23 says this: "You shall be careful to perform what goes out from your lips, just as you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised." Numbers 30, verse 2, similarly, "If a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to bind himself with a binding obligation, he shall not violate his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." So just two initial observations. One, it's actually just very practical. And I'm not sure why you came to church this morning, but maybe just this, in this very practical moment, you're like, okay, this was enough, because I had a reminder that was important. And the reminder is this: our world is better, our relationships are better when we follow through with what we say we're gonna do. And this is what Torah did for the nation of Israel. It pointed them in the direction of life. It pointed them in the direction of goodness. And this is what the law is doing. Hey, look, things are better when we follow through on what we say we're gonna do. And things are worse. Our relationships are worse. Our friendships are worse. Our world is worse when we don't. When our culture is that of just not following through, it's worse. I know, just very practically, I need this reminder sometimes. I have coffee with a friend every Friday morning. And this has been a standing coffee meeting for a long time. Friday morning, drop Caleb off at school, go meet this friend for coffee. It's been happening for a long time now. So the interesting thing is that friend continues to, every Thursday night, like, text me, say, "Hey, you still coming? Like, are we still on for this?" And like, for a while, I was like, okay, I'm not gonna be offended by that, because, you know, we're just getting used to it. But after a while, it's like, okay, the way you're checking is saying something. So I actually said something to him. I said, "Hey, like, so this is a standing thing. You know we're gonna do this thing on Friday." And he said, "Yeah, Matt, but I know my brother." And maybe I didn't get the tone of that just right. But if the tone was just right, what you would have heard him say was, "Yes, Matt, I know that we've been doing this for a while, but sometimes you don't follow through on what you say you're gonna do," is what he was saying to me. So that's why I text and check in. And I'm like, you know, this is important, because this is not the dream. This is not the kind of friend I wanna be. This is not the kind of reputation I wanna have. I know that it's not good for relationships. Now, okay, I know that's a silly example. It's meeting coffee, but my guess is that each one of us in this room could locate a moment in life where we were more seriously hurt by somebody not following through on what they said they were gonna do. And it caused a big problem. And so just practically, it's worth saying, like, this is good, okay, this is good. But it doesn't stop there, and Jesus is not gonna stop there. This has gotta be a whole lot more than, hey, some lesson in morality and something we already know, but we just have trouble doing, okay? So I want to notice one more thing about the law in Deuteronomy and the law in Numbers 30. There's language that I think Jesus really takes to the next level in his teaching. If we look back, Deuteronomy 23, it says this. It says, "You shall be careful to perform what goes out from your lips." What goes out from your lips. And in Numbers chapter 30, again, "He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." Out of his mouth. And the signal here is this. It's the reality of you have an inner life, and then you have an outer life. And there's stuff inside of you that may or may not come out. You know, the inside thoughts don't always become the outside thoughts, and that's a good thing for a lot of us, right? It's a very good thing. But here's the thing. Like, if there's something that's inside of you, and it does come out of you, it makes it through your lips onto the outside of you into the world, it's very important. It has to match. Like, outer life, inner life, alignment is really important. And this is the direction that the law is pointing, that this teaching is pointing us toward. And then Jesus is going to, again, he's going to extend it. But this is a way of life, alignment between our outer lives and our inner lives. And when they're out of sync, when they're out of alignment, it's not good. We don't. It's not good for us. It's not good for anybody. So again, Jesus takes this and he runs with it. And I want to fast forward Matthew chapter 23. He's talking specifically about this issue when what's happening on our outer lives, the world-facing part of our lives, does not match what's happening on the inside. Jesus is talking to the Pharisees of the day, the religious leaders. The conversation was not going well. It wasn't pleasant. Jesus was really leaning into one of their major flaws, and it was this. This is Jesus' big problem with them. Of all the people whose outer lives and inner lives don't match, they just were the worst. And Jesus actually said, before he says this thing that I'm going to read on the screen, Jesus said, "Hey, Pharisees, like, it's so bad with you guys in terms of your outer life and your inner lives being totally different that when you convert people to your way, Jesus said, you convert them to being twice the sons of hell as you are." I mean, Jesus is not mincing words. To get a taste, he says this, verses 27 through 28, Matthew 23. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead." Ooh, and everything unclean. "In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous." Like, you appear, your outer life, okay, yeah, righteous. "You appear very nicely, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Jesus is saying, "Hey, we need to pay attention to this. Because if we're not there, then my dreams for your life are not being fully realized." And in a way, here's how we can kind of capture Jesus, what Jesus is saying to the Pharisees. Number one, okay, Pharisees, and okay, I have to say this. I can relate. And I'll get into that in a second. But when Jesus is talking to the Pharisees here, I feel like he's talking to me. And I just wanna say that. Because he says this, basically, Pharisees, your outer lives are governed by rules and social expectations. Your outer lives are governed by these things. But your inner lives, what are they governed by? What is your inner life governed by? Well, Romans 8, 6 through 8 says this, "The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the spirit is life and peace." Well, the mind, our inner life, well, the inner life that's governed by the flesh is death. And Jesus is saying, "Hey, Pharisees, your inner life, it seems to be full of death." Jesus is saying, your outer lives, yes, governed by rules and social expectations. Your inner lives, governed by your flesh. So the question is, well, what does it mean to have an inner life that's governed by the flesh? I think most simply, this is the word that's most helpful for me. It has to do with our appetites. Our appetites. Literally, like, the physical appetite of our flesh and our body, like in my belly, like my gut, I need to put food in it and I get hungry. Like, sometimes, does anybody know someone whose outer life is changes based on what's happening inside their belly, you know? Call it hangry. Yeah, it's a thing. It's a real thing. Our outer life can sometimes be governed by our appetite. Funny story. This was early on in our marriage. Robin and I were, it was anniversary time, and some family members, they pulled together and they got us this really sweet gift card to a restaurant down 8th Street, Southeast, like Barracks Row. And just so you know, Robin told me I could tell you this story, okay? Because this is... One of us struggles with being hangry. At this time, I don't know if it's still this way, but the restaurant, it was the kind of thing where, like, you had to show up in the morning and wait in line to be assigned time to come back and actually have dinner. Like, you had to, it was really involved process. So we're like, this is incredible. This is like the best restaurant in the world. We've got a gift card. Let's go. We wake up, we go, we wait in line, we get our time. And it's already been kind of a long day down there, but this is exciting. This is a big deal. This is date day. We get up to the front of the line. They say, okay, come back in 2.5 hours. And we're like, oh my gosh, okay, we've already been waiting all day. This is getting long. But we're like, it's okay. This is exciting. We're going to kill some time. We're going to do some shopping, whatever. So we went and we killed about 30 minutes and then things started going sideways. Okay. You know, and there's shops down there. Robin loves shopping, but that wasn't enough. At one point, I was like, we were crossing a street and like a car kind of cut us off as we were walking. And Robin, like, I thought Robin was going to attack the car. Like, wow, this is interesting what I'm seeing here. And I got to thinking, you know, maybe just need a little snacky. You know, maybe just need a little snack. And so we did. We walked down, District Donut, saved the day, popped a donut. We get outside, halfway down the block. Everything's good again. We're excited. It's going to be an incredible date. Okay, again, funny story about, yes, an appetite on our inside of our flesh. An appetite of our flesh sometimes can govern our lives. And maybe it's problematic. Because if you're like me, my appetites are unstable. They're in, another word for unstable, they're in consistent. My appetites are inconsistent. And it especially matters when we start talking about maybe more serious appetites. Like, maybe you can relate, but sometimes I struggle with the appetite for an appetite for status. Like an appetite for being seen by others a certain way. Like an appetite for that. Or maybe even an appetite for validation. And maybe your appetite for validation is something one day, and you would kind of do things that you wouldn't normally do because your appetite for validation is peaking or something like that. Appetite for status, appetite for validation, appetite for physical intimacy. Like, we have these appetites that are a part of us. That would Jesus would say, look, this is what it means to be governed by the flesh, is your appetites. And they kind of control you. And here's the thing. When we want to think about Jesus' dreams for our life, it's not that our lives are chaotic because we're governed by inconsistent appetites. It's much bigger than that. I do think it's worth saying, when I think about my own inner life and some of the appetites that are still a part of me, that sometimes cause me problems in my relationships. When I think about that, in a way, I'm kind of grateful for rules and social expectations. I really am, because I'm like, you know, there's stuff inside of me that it's not good for my relationships when it comes out of me. And oftentimes it stays in there because of rules and it stays in there because of social expectations. And I'm like, okay, thank you. But here's the deal, and this is why this is not Jesus' dream for our lives, because sometimes, and maybe you are like me, sometimes that stuff inside of you, a part of your inner life, these appetites, that you know, when they come out and they cause problems relationally, sometimes even with the rules and even with the social expectations, it still comes out. And you still have to clean up the mess. So I was 25 years old. I was working for a church in Bend, Oregon. It was called Compass Community Church. And we actually were a church for people who don't go to church. So that was pretty cool. Got to be a part of that. I was 25. I was on staff at the church. I was late for a Sunday morning service. This is not a good look. It doesn't feel good. Okay. But I was a youth pastor, so. Wait, no, I'm still a youth pastor. No, wait. No, we take getting to work on time seriously. I was late to service. This is not good. I'm stressed and I'm hustling to work. And okay, maybe stress is the thing for you, but you know, that's the whole thing about there's stuff on the inside of you that when it comes out, like, it causes problems. And maybe like when you're stressed, it comes out more regularly. Like, maybe. So this was me. So we're driving. I'm late to church. Church is on Bear Creek Road out on the outskirts of town, right? Down Bear Creek Road, there's the church and there's some neighborhoods, and that's pretty much it. We turn left on Bear Creek Road. Church is about a half mile down. A quarter mile down the road, the car in front of me just stops. Just no hazard lights, no turn signal, nothing. Just stop sitting there. And I'm late and I'm stressed. And so, and there's stuff inside of me that's not always great for relationships and community. Anyways, I said, like, I don't have time for this. So I start like laying on the horn, right? You're already laughing. Yeah, it's embarrassing. Everybody knows if you're within like a mile of your workplace, don't honk at people, right? Or you're a mile of your house, a mile of your workplace, don't do it. It might feel really good, but it's gonna be awkward at some point later. Anyways, I'm laying on the horn because I'm stressed and it's not good and nothing. So then I start popping again, pop, pop, honk, 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 right? Okay, after like five or six honks, I just see this family of ducks walk out from in front of the car that was in front of me. So who's the idiot, right? Not the car who was waiting patiently for the cute family of ducks to cross the road. No, the one who's angrily honking, despite the fact that I'm within a quarter mile of our church. Yes, they did pull into the church parking lot. Yes, I did follow them into the parking lot. Yes, I did have to go apologize to them, say, I'm so sorry. It's really embarrassing that I did that. Please forgive me. Okay. Look, even with the rules and social expectations, the stuff that's inside that causes me problems, it still comes out. And so we had to be clear, like Jesus' dreams for our lives is not to have our outer lives governed by rules and social expectations. And then inside it is what it is. Inside we're ruled by our flesh or ruled by our appetites. No. Okay. Let's get to what Jesus' dream is. All right. This is maybe the most, someone put it this way and it really resonated with me. Jesus' dream for our life is different. One is that our inner lives are good. Jesus' dream for my life is that my inner life is good. And when I say good, I don't mean good like good enough. And I don't mean good like, better than their inner life. They're more messed up. Like, Jesus' dream for our inner life to be good is like good in the way that you want the foundation of your house to be good, right? Like you're building a house. The foundation is just poured. You turn to the contractor. You're like, okay, hey, contractor, the foundation, are we good? Like, are we good? Like, we're set. Like, because a foundation for a house, it's good when it's free. It's free from all the things that could potentially cause problems. And this is what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying the dream is that your inner life is good and that your outer life is just governed by your inner life because now they're aligned. Now they're in sync. I don't have an inner life that is one thing and an outer life that's another thing because the outer life is managed by rules. No, it's like my inner life is good. It's been transformed and my outer life is just, I get to live freely out of my inner life. And this is the first century followers of Jesus. They talked about this. They said, hey, when your inner life is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, you grew up in Sunday school, you know that's the fruit of the spirit verse, right? Like when your inner life is these things, there's no need for rules. There's no need for laws. Against these things, there can be no law. Now we're starting to get at what Jesus' dream is for my life, but also for our world. Jesus' dream is that our inner lives, ultimately our minds, our inner lives are transformed by his because his was good. Now, we'll just bring this to a close here. I think two things. One, maybe more than two things, three things. I don't want to lie to you. I'm working on the inner life. I want to lie to you and tell you it's just two things, but that's the inner life. And then okay. A couple things. Matthew 11, like Jesus said this thing in Matthew 11 that I never felt like I fully understood. And honestly, I'm not sure I still fully do. But as I was thinking about this kind of idea, like maybe this is it. So Jesus says this. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I wonder if ultimately what Jesus is doing, he's talking to the person who's just exhausted. Like you're tired because it's exhausting to govern your outer life with rules and social expectations when your inner life still has you know, it's still problematic. It's exhausting. And I wonder if Jesus is saying, hey, this is where you find rest, and this is where I lighten the load, because I'm going to give you my yoke. I'm going to give you my mind. You can learn from me. My inner life is available to you. My mind is available to you. This, again, it goes back to one of the central claims of Christianity, that Jesus put his inner life on display with his outer life in a beautiful way, in a compelling way, in a world-changing way. Jesus's life, unbelievable. He put that inner life on display, and then he went and then he laid that life down. This is, we're getting almost to Easter, right? The death and resurrection of Jesus. Jesus said, I'm going to lay my life down as an offering for you. And if you so choose, I'm making my inner life available to you, and you can take my life up again. And Jesus is offering this gift to us, and it's free. This is the grace of God. Jesus says, my mind, my inner life is available to you. I've laid my life down. You can take it up. So that ultimately, my dreams for your life may become true, because your inside will be your inner life will be transformed, and then your outer life can just reflect it. Okay. Last main thing. I'll be quick about this, but I think it's worth noting that I'm over here with my chaotic inner life. It has fleshly appetites for status and validation and just hungers. I have so many appetites, and sometimes my life is governed by them. So many different appetites, and my life is chaotic because of it. It's worth noting that Jesus had one appetite and one appetite alone. His inner life was governed by only one appetite, no others. And it was an appetite for relationship with us. It's so important to know, because this is what leads me to a place, when I think about Jesus, it leads me to a place of worship. It leads me to a place where I say, Jesus, you're good. Jesus, you are worthy of worship, because I see Jesus's life, and his appetite was for one thing, relationship with us. And that's why Jesus in his life, he would go and he would touch those who were diseased when others wouldn't, because his appetite was for relationship with that person. It's why he would go and he would break social boundaries, and he would go have conversations with women at wells, because his appetite was for relationship with her, to be known by her in the same way that, you know, it's like to be in relationship. This is why Jesus lived the way that he did. His life was governed by it. And just to be clear, Jesus's appetite for relationship with the leper and with everybody, it's the same appetite he has for relationship with me and for you. And I wanted you to hear this morning, Jesus loves you. Jesus loves you and wants to be in a relationship with you and wants you to know him in the way that he knows you. And our teaching this morning says it's about the mind of Christ. So, okay, the big question is, okay, how do I get it? There's a practical side and a not so practical side. The practical side, John's been showing a lot about this. We know a lot about rewiring. We know a lot about neuroplasticity, okay? We understand how we stamp new neural pathways and we let old ones kind of fade, right? So obtaining the mind of Christ, we know a little bit about that practically. Meditation, three minutes a day, we can start simple, but this is how we change and are transformed. But then there's a not so practical side of this. Like if you're here and you're like, okay, yeah, the mind of Christ, I want it. I'm interested. The not so practical side is kind of a matter of just asking for it. This request often comes in the form of what you would call a prayer, but it's a conversation with Jesus, and it goes like this: Jesus, your inner life was good. Mine can be problematic. I want your mind, Christ. I need the mind of Christ. That's pretty much it. First century Christians, they looked at that moment as the moment they would call salvation, where they rescued out of their chaotic inner life. And this morning, the same thing is available to us. And so here's the deal. The band is going to come out and lead us in a closing song. I think the lyrics of this song, it couldn't be better if we're looking for an opportunity to just take a couple minutes and reflect on what we've heard this morning. So will you pray with me? And then we'll sing. Jesus, my prayer is first just gratitude I'm grateful that your inner life was on display through your outer life. And I'm grateful for the reality that you've made your inner life available to me. Lord, transform me. Make me more like you. Lord, for every person here this morning, I just pray that their sense would be an encounter with you. Help everyone to know, Jesus, how much you love them. It would be good. Amen.